certainly is good to be here today. It's good to see everyone out. We are missing a few, and I was just thinking also Sister Rosemary isn't here this morning. We hope she's okay. We miss her when she is not here. There has been a lot going on, and this last Friday was the last Friday Night Out event. From May through September, we've handed out quite a few DVDs, talked to a lot of people, and we need to be praying that the seed will fall on good and honest hearts. Friday evening, Brother Jim was handing out flyers for the gospel meeting to people there. He's an encouragement to us, and with the song leading, everybody's an encouragement, and it takes everybody working together. We've got flyers. When we run out of flyers, or before, I'll have more, so we can keep inviting everybody out. It is, as Ron said, a good number, and I'm sure Kent remembers, and Brother Wayne Walker, he would always say, we've got a good number out today, whatever the number was, and whenever we have people that come together to worship God, it's a good number. So we've got a good number here this morning. As I've mentioned a couple weeks ago, I want to do several sermons that tie in with some of our classes just to reinforce them. I do not like the idea of like some places where you've got 52 Sundays, so you hear 104 different topics, sermons on different topics. And it's not how many topics you can cover in a year, but how well we can understand it, implement it in our life, and take it and share it with others. So this morning I want us to consider Blueprint for Holiness. And Brother Chris read 1 Peter 1, 13 through 16, which we have looked at in class. And when I went to my computer to pull up the passages on holy, the first thing that struck me was it had over 500 references to the word holy. And the thought that goes through my mind is, we don't talk about being holy enough. We just don't talk about being holy enough. And if we don't talk about it, we don't think about it. Are we going to be holy? So one of the first things to consider, though, is that holiness is not new to the New Testament. It was an idea that the Israelites were very familiar with. And I just want to start off with to read several passages from the Old Testament that talk about holiness. Exodus 3, verse 5, then he said, "Do not draw near this place. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy ground." Leviticus 10, verses 2 and 3. So fire went out from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. And Moses said to Aaron, "This is what the Lord spoke, saying, by those who come near me, I must be regarded as holy. And before all the people, I must be glorified." So Aaron held his peace. Leviticus chapter 11, beginning at verse 44. "For I am the Lord your God. You shall therefore consecrate yourselves, and you shall be holy, for I am holy. Neither shall you defile yourselves with any creeping thing that creeps on the earth. For I am the Lord who brings you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. This is the law of the animals and the birds and every living creature that moves in the waters and of every creature that creeps on the earth, to distinguish between the unclean and the clean, and between the animal that may be eaten and the animal that may not be eaten." Leviticus 19:2. "Speak to all the congregation of the children of Israel and say to them, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy." Leviticus 20:26. "And you shall be holy to me, for I, the Lord, am holy, and have separated you from the peoples that you should be mine." Isaiah 6, beginning at verse 1. "In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting on a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above it stood seraphim. Each one had six wings. With two he covered his face, and with two he covered his feet, and with two he flew. And one cried to another and said, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory." And the posts of the door were shaken by the voice of him who cried out, and the house was filled with smoke. So I said, "Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for my eyes have seen the King, says the Lord of hosts." In Isaiah 57:15, "For thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabiteth eternity, whose name is holy, I dwell in the high and holy place with him. Also that is of a contrite and humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble, and to revive the heart of the contrite ones." And in Psalm 99:9, "Exalt the Lord your God, and worship at his holy hill, for the Lord our God is holy." So these are just, as I said, just a few of the verses in the Old Testament that talks about holiness. And God commanded them to be holy from the beginning of the law. And the reason was because he is holy. Well, what does it mean to be holy? Holy signifies a separation. It signifies a separation to God. We are separated from sin and therefore consecrated to God to be holy. So essentially, what holiness is a separation from a life of habitual sin to an all-worldly defilement, to being separated and set apart to God. The words sanctify, sanctification, saint, holy, holiness, all derive from the same root, so they all share a related meaning. So here we have God as our perfect pattern of holiness. And he is set forth as our example to practice in all manner of living. So holiness on some occasions in the Old Testament was addressed to the priest. At other times it was addressed to the whole nation of Israel. And when we come to the epistle of Peter, Peter regards and he calls us as individuals as priests. We are priests, individuals, and again, the priests were qualified to offer up worship to God. And today, as Christians, we are priests, and we are to be holy priests and offer up sacrifices unto God. When you think about the Israelites, they were a peculiar people, and they were separated. When you look at this map, they were separated from the other nations. When you just look at that map, that should give you a reinforcement of this. They were separated from all, physically, from all the other nations. They were a holy nation. Exodus 9:5-6, 22, Leviticus 11:44, 19:2-27, they were a holy nation. We as God's people are a holy nation. We are not physically separated from the nation that we live in, but we are a holy spiritual nation. And as a spiritual nation, we should be separated from this worldly environment that we live in. And if anybody talks to me for a little bit, they know that I can talk for hours about politics. I can talk for hours about politics. And politics should be a concern. But friends, we've got to get in our minds and our hearts that the politics of this world are nothing compared to the King that we serve. And Satan likes us sometimes to get caught up in what's going on. Because when we're talking about what's going on in Washington, a lot of times we aren't talking about what's going on in the kingdom of heaven. And we are a holy people, separate, set apart from sin, set apart to serve God. This is a characteristic of people, this holiness. We imitate God and we worship Him. And He is holy and pure, Jehovah is. And as His children, we are to be holy and pure and worship Him. Well, how do we know how to be holy? Again, God is our standard of holiness, because it is written, "Be holy, for I am holy." Well, if God is our standard, just what does that mean? I mean, somebody can say this is holy, somebody can say that's holy. You have to have a standard, and that's why I have this rule down here along with the blueprint or pattern. There's a rule. If I asked everybody how long this table is up here, if I asked five people, I'd probably get five different answers. So how do we know how long it is? How do we know? Are we left to wonder? If I say, I think it's about 6 feet long, and somebody says, I feel it's 5.5 feet, how do we come to some conclusion on what the length of that table is? We have a standard. We compare that table to the standard, and then we don't have to guess. We don't have to wonder. My opinion doesn't matter anything at all. How somebody feels doesn't matter. And when it comes to holiness, we have a standard. God is our standard. Be holy as I am holy. 1 Thessalonians 4, 3, and 7. For this is the will of God, your sanctification, that you should abstain from sexual immorality, that each of you should know how to possess his own vessel in sanctification and honor. And remember, every time you see that word sanctify, sanctification, it's talking about holiness, being set apart from sin, set apart to God. Not in passion of lust like the Gentiles who do not know God, that no one should take advantage of and defraud his brother in this matter, because the Lord is avenger of all such, as we also forewarned you and testified. For God did not call us to uncleanness, but in holiness. So we are called out of that life that we used to live in. We are called to holiness, to be set apart, to serve God. So how do we get started with that? Well, holiness begins in the mind. In 1 Peter 1:13, therefore gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Gird up the loins of your mind. We must be prepared. We must remove anything that would impede our progress to gird up our mind. What might we need to remove? Maybe it's a TV set. Maybe it's a tablet. Maybe it's this group or this person. Maybe if we associate with this person, our mind's not going to be in the right frame of mind to gird up to holiness. So I've got to ask the question of everyone here. Are you ready in your mind to be holy? Because if you aren't ready in your mind, you aren't going to be holy. Again, holiness is mentioned over 500 times. It's something we do not talk about. We must not conform our thinking to the former lust. Verse 14, as obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lust as in your ignorance. So we have the mind of Christ contrasted with the mind of the world. And I have to ask myself every day, am I molding my mind to be the same as the mind of Christ? 1 Peter 4, 1 and 2, therefore, since Christ suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same mind. For he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, that he no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh for the lust of men, but for the will of God. We have to arm ourselves with the mind of Christ. If we don't, again, we are here on this foreign territory. We are in the enemy territory. Satan is the prince of this world, and we have to be sober and vigilant, or Satan is just going to eat us up. We have to have the mind of Christ. And just as Christ, as he suffered in the flesh, if we suffer in the flesh, we put that away. I'm sorry, he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. Christ did not sin, but we need to arm ourselves with the mind of Christ so that we do not sin. When we keep that fixed in our mind, that is going to help us to put away that former life. So it begins in the mind. Does it just stay in the mind? No. It's going to follow that holiness manifests itself in our actions. So if we are to be different, if we are to be set apart from the world, that's not always going to be easy. 1 Peter 1, 14 and 16, as obedient children, not conforming yourselves to former lusts as in your ignorance, but as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, because it is written, be holy for I am holy. When the world is swimming that way, which way do we swim? Like that little goldfish, we swim the opposite direction. We don't want to conform ourselves and be in that school of fish that's all swimming one direction. We need to conform our life to God's will so that we can be holy. So obedience harmonizes with holiness. Obedience. We can't say that we are holy if we aren't obedient. We can't say that we are holy if we haven't made up our mind to be holy. As obedient children obey their parents, we obey our Father who is holy. So in obedience, the mind is submissive to God. The mind is submissive to God. We have to surrender our will to His will for us to be holy. And consider this. Our holiness, it's affected, it's either strengthened or it's compromised by what we join ourselves with in fellowship. Think about that. Our holiness is either strengthened or it's compromised by what we join ourselves with in fellowship. Now, there may be some, and I'm just don't have any particular group in mind, there may be some really good social club that a lot of men belong to. They do good, they do this, they do that. And there's nothing wrong with joining that unless if we join a group and they are going this way with things, are they going to take us along with them or are we going to go the other way? Our holiness is affected. It's either strengthened or compromised by who we associate with. Who's your best friend? Is your best friend a spiritually strong person, or is your best friend someone in the world? We are going to be strengthened or compromised. Our holiness. Our holiness is so critical to our Christian life. 1 Peter 4:3, for we have spent enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles when we walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. People will say, well, that person's, they're a pretty good person. They may do this or that. Well, then recognize that and watch your association with them. It doesn't mean that you cannot associate with them at all, but you need to make sure that you are letting them know that you are going to live a life set apart from their lifestyle. You do not approve of their lifestyle. And in 1 Peter 1:17, And if you call on the Father, who without partiality judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves throughout the time of your stay here in fear. So holiness involves obedience. It involves action. It talks about our conduct. And how should we conduct ourselves this week? Hopefully the same as we have every other week. We conduct ourselves throughout the time of your stay here in fear. We need to have the fear of God. We need to have His love, His joy, His peace. But we need to have the fear. We don't serve just any God. We serve the one true Jehovah. When you think back about that map of Israel and the nations round about them, when they started to cross over the Jordan and go into Canaan, the people knew about the God of the Israelites because He was a mighty and awesome God. He was a God that separated the Red Sea. He was the God that caused destruction to the kings. They knew of His power and His might. And we've got to realize, friends, that we serve the one true holy God, and we must be holy today. Why should we strive to be holy? Besides of all of those other reasons, beside the fact that God commands us to, and besides the fact that we are to be obedient children, as I just read in verse 17 of chapter 1, and if you call on the Father, who without partiality judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves throughout the time of your stay here in fear. Now this word "if" is not to be taken as indicating doubt, but rather he's introducing another subject here, and he is establishing a condition that establishes a duty that we have. So we learn that our Heavenly Father is our judge, and this judgment is going to be according to every man's work. And this judgment is to be conducted without respect of persons. It's going to be with complete fairness and impartiality. So you might just think of any congregation and somebody say, "Oh, brother so-and-so, sister so-and-so, they are such good people. They are such good people. You know they are going to go to heaven." We hope they are. But God is going to judge without respect of persons, whether it's this well-known brother or sister or somebody you can't even remember their name, if they are doing the will of God. It's going to be with complete fairness and impartiality. The phrase "without respect of persons," the meaning is literally "who does not receive face." They do not receive face. And that's according to Thayer. And again, that goes back, as we've talked about, Lady Justice, and she has the blindfold. She doesn't see if it's this brother or this sister. Lady Justice is going to judge on fairness. And God, He is going to judge impartially, fairly. And what's He going to judge? He is going to judge our conduct, our work, our actions. And as a holy God, our work, our conduct, our actions, our speech is to be holy. So God is not going to judge us on the basis of wealth or what culture we are from, what nationality we are, what social position we have, how much money we have. He's just going to judge us on reference to our work. "The Lord seeth not as man seeth, for man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart." And when you stop and think about this, how He's going to judge, and that should be a sobering fact for all of us, because we are all going to stand before Him one day. And His holiness is up here. Holy, holy, holy. And where are we? We are separated from God because of our sins. So the dilemma that we have is that we as sinners need to be reconciled. We need to be reconciled before we can approach God. And then God solved that in the reconciliation of the blood of the cross, that we can now approach Him. 1 Peter 1:18 through 21, knowing that you were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. He indeed was foreordained before the foundation of the world, but was manifest in these last times for you, who through him believe in God, who raised him from the dead and gave him glory, so that your faith and hope are in God. So Peter gives this beautiful picture of redemption. Just like the slaves were bought on the marketplace, they were redeemed, they were bought. How were they bought? With gold or silver? Peter says, know that you were redeemed, not with gold and silver, but that you were redeemed with the precious blood of Christ. We were redeemed, we were purchased. Jesus shed his blood that he might purchase the church. That's you and me. He purchased us to buy us out of sin. Why did he buy us out of sin? So that we can keep on sinning? No. If you paid a lot of money, just to make up an example, and bought someone a car, and they took that car out and abused it and wrecked it, and you had paid a large amount of money for that car, you might not look favorably on that individual that you bought that car for. And you think about Christ. What was the cost that he paid for us? His own blood. He left heaven and came down to die and be our sacrifice as of a lamb without blemish and spot. He purchased us so that we can keep living like we wanted to? No. He purchased us so that we can be holy like he is holy. Like he is holy. Holiness is not new. Holiness means separation from sin, sanctification to God. God is our standard of holiness. It begins in our mind. It manifests itself in our actions. And we should strive to be holy every day of our life. I put up here, on this last slide, it's commanded, but there are so many reasons why we should be holy. We have an example. We have an example of holiness. God, he is our example, and the Bible is full of explaining how he is holy. We have the standard. God is the standard, and he's revealed himself into his word, and it's going to take some hard work. It's going to take some hard work. We are not going to be holy by accident. Isaiah 57:15, friends, holy God dwells on high with the humble in heart. Don't you want to dwell with God? You have to be humble in heart. And God chose to save us in Christ in order that we might be holy and without blame before him. Ephesians 1:4. We bear the responsibility of reverent holiness, knowing that our conduct will be judged. 1 Peter 1:17. Does anybody here call God their Father? And if you call on the Father, who without partiality judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves throughout the time of your stay here in fear. Friend, are you living a holy life? This is so important. We cannot ignore it. We must be baptized to have the forgiveness of our past sins, but it doesn't stop there. Christ didn't give his life, give his blood to purchase us so that we could go back and keep on sinning. there's anybody here this morning that's struggling with sin and needs the prayers of the congregation, don't put it off. If there's anybody outside of the church that has not been purchased, you cannot approach a holy God, and you do not stand in favor with Him. If there's anybody that needs to make correction in their life this morning, we invite you to come forward now as we stand and sing.
Would you be free from your earth?